Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This is the Runner's World podcast.
Welcome to the Runner's World podcast with me, Rick Pearson.
And me, Jane Maguire.
This week, we're speaking with ultra running legend, Jim Walmsley. Jane, how's it going?
Yeah, all good. How are you?
Yeah, fine, thank you. I went for a little 12-mile run yesterday and found myself on the River Wandle in South London, which is, it's not a particularly glamorous site, but it was very flat. So that had its advantages. Yeah, how about you? Did you get out for a run on the weekend or not?
I did. I've had, it was my birthday at the weekend. So I've had a very hungover, slow 10 mile, one of those like you think it might help you, but actually it hurts you more kind of runs yesterday, but still got it done. It was really rainy, wasn't it? So it was kind of like, I think I was glad actually. Something about running in the rain, isn't it? You feel like it cleanses.
No, completely agree. I think that running in light drizzle, it does cleanse you in more. And it, in some ways, it feels like a little bit heroic. Do you know what I mean? When you're kind of running through this kind of like slightly, hard weather. I think that's true. And also, I mean, it's been lovely the weather, isn't it? But I've been kind of slightly overheating on some of these runs, and yesterday wasn't like that at all. So there's been a few more of these FKTs being set as well. So John Kelly, who we talked about on last week's podcast, but he did it, right? So I think he broke the 31-year Pennine Way record by something like 40 minutes, which kind of sounds like a lot until you realise that, you know, he's been running for 2 days. It's really nothing. I bet it was, sort of went right down to the wire. It was kind of, amazing achievement.
I hope he listened to the podcast while he did it. Yeah. And I hope he's listening now. Congrats, John.
Well done, John. Hopefully he's woken up. Because I presume he probably only slept about less than an hour in 2 days. I think you wouldn't be able to do it unless you were, you know, basically on your feet for 23 and a half hours out of 24. Just amazing. It's been a real kind of glut, hasn't there, of... people doing
exciting.
These things. Yeah, it is. Yeah, and I think, like we sort of mentioned last week, like in the absence of official races, these kind of, like DIY fastest known time attempts come into their own a bit because you need a crew if you're going to take it seriously, but you don't need much of the kind of apparatus of a race, right? Also, I think another friend of the mag, Damien Hall, is having a go at, so this is kind of bizarre, right? So I think this Pennine Way record stood for 31 years. I don't know how many people tried to take it on it, but now in the space of a week, it could go again because I think Damien Hall on Wednesday is beginning his attempt to do the Pennine Way. He's going to run it the opposite way, so north to south.
He is. Yeah. And an exclusive, I guess people listening to this will be the first ones to hear, we're actually following his trip, and every day there'll be a video going up on our Facebook page, Runners World UK, and you'll be able to watch the highs and lows, I guess, is the only way I can probably describe it. But it's exciting. We'll be with him and hopefully watch it all happen.
Yeah, no, it's great. I mean, he's a really interesting case, Damien, because he's, you know, he's kind of got a bit of a double life as a sort of freelance journalist and also a top ultra runner. Didn't get into ultra running until he was about 30 and has just really kind of like worked incredibly hard to become, I think, one of Britain's best ultra runners, really. By, you know, he finished, I think, fifth or fourth at the UTMB. So he's like right up there with the best guys on that kind of stuff. So I think, you know, he's got a chance really of running John close, if not beating it.
Good luck. Good luck, Damien. If you're, I don't know what you do. I can't imagine running for like 3 days. I don't know if I'd want to be. What would you listen to for all that time?
Yeah. Do you reckon you might have to go to sort of pop music? Might feel too short and kind of throwaway. Maybe you need to go to like, you know, the Ring Cycle or some kind of like great sort of classical suite.
I imagine you could listen to like all of the Lord of the Rings or something, couldn't you? In that time, you'd have to.
Yeah.
I've listened to Harry Potter's marathon training, but I don't know if even that would Stephen Fry grate on you after 3 days non-stop. Maybe.
I like the idea of Lord of the Rings. If that feels right, because there is a hell of a lot of running in Lord of the Rings, isn't there? It's basically just lots of people running towards or from things for in kind of epic. I guess it's New Zealand scenery, isn't it? But I think that's a good shout. Well, maybe we'll find out, Damien. If you're listening, what will be on your headphones?
Hopefully he's not listening to this and he's like, shut up.
Yeah. I think it's time, Jane, for us to bring on our guest of the week.
Yes, exciting. Guest of the week. Here in the studio, guest of the week. Sometimes on the phone. Could be an athlete.
Could be a physio or a complete unknown. Our guest this week is one of the most exciting ultra runners on the planet. Jim Walmsley is a 50-mile world record holder and two-time winner of the Western States 100, perhaps the world's most prestigious ultramarathon. But it's not just what Walmsley has won, but the way in which he wins that makes him such an exciting runner. He flies off from the start at a seemingly unsustainable pace, tempting others to follow him, either to glory or oblivion. With the Western States cancelled this year, I caught up with Walmsley to learn a little bit more about how he trains, why he likes to run from the front, and any advice he has for someone looking to run their first ultramarathon. So Jim, you made your name principally as an ultra runner, but presumably you didn't start out by running 100 milers. So could you briefly explain how you first got into distance running?
Yeah, so I grew up running track in high school and college. Ran at the Air Force Academy, Division I NCAA. So actually raced a lot of UK runners that went to University of New Mexico. But ran Division I there, kind of did all right. Had PRs of around, like, I think 13:52 for 5K and 29:08, I think, in like the 110K I ran. And then I even tried the steeple a handful of times. But I went to a military academy. So basically my job after college was to go into the Air Force. And so I kind of thought my running was a bit done. But then I got stationed up in Montana. And I kind of say that's where it's like this really great access to outdoor activities and hiking and lakes and all sorts of fun things to do. And that was kind of a new experience for me. And I kind of started meshing the two together of like, well, this says it's a 3-day hike, but it's only 20 something miles. So I'm like, I could just run that. Cause like I've just done that. And, so I kind of started dipping my toes into that to basically make better use of my time while hiking. I just started doing some trail running, and then looking at some local races of just kind of, I think a lot of college kids struggle with this of you're really fit, more than like better runner than average, good shape sort of thing. And you're like looking for things to do and trying to struggle with the balance of, doing running, I guess, as a hobby or casually, and still balancing like the next chapter of your life. But what ended up happening is kind of, I guess, I ended up separating from the Air Force and had a chance to just put all my eggs into a basket. And I guess, I didn't really have the best experience in the military for myself. So, what was making me happy was getting to go out on those runs and trying to do some of these trail races that I was just learning was a sport. And like, I guess my other options would be go back to school or start putting together a better job resume and stuff. But something that got me pretty excited was to go explore this ultra trail world that I was just kind of learning about and kind of had a background in running. So it was becoming, or it came pretty naturally. So I think that was about 2015 when I transitioned from the Air Force into figuring out what I was going to do in life, and kind of narrowed down that I knew I'm originally from Arizona, in the US. I'm from Phoenix, which is just a hot, dry place, but just north of us, we have like a really great running mecca that's at altitude about over 2,000 meters. Lots of world-class runners come through there to train and stuff. So I knew there was a good spot and a pretty easy transition if I were to move back to where I'm from to bump up to Flagstaff, and ended up getting a job at this bike shop up there called Absolute Bikes, and just started kind of going for it from there, but learned all sorts of stuff along the way.
Yeah, so that's quite a journey. That, I mean, one part of that that I'm interested in is that the speed that you were taking into ultra running. You talked about your 5k PB there, 13:52, 10k PB, 29:08. So really good times. I think maybe there was a time in ultra running, I'm thinking of people like Anton Kropitschke here, people like I idolized, you know, 10 years ago, who maybe didn't come in with that kind of speed. They were kind of mountain guys, and they loved being out and doing long miles and stuff. But you're coming in there with that leg speed. Do you feel like that's been a real kind of differentiator for you when you step up to like a 50 mile or 100 miler, that you know that you've got all this kind of, yeah, all this speed in the bank? Do you think it's helpful?
Yes and no, because I would say the speed doesn't come super naturally for me. I kind of always like jokingly said that the track was a bit of a dead end sport for me, because I was never going to win in a championship style race.
Yeah.
Aerobically wise, like I could time trial extremely well, but when it came to the last lap, never quite had like that 50 low 50 something second lap,
okay.
400
yeah.
meters. So it was always a bit frustrating. But yeah, the times we're okay. I would say I wish I ran faster, but at some point, kind of, it is what it is, and you move on to the
right.
next one. But I would say right now it's kind of exciting too, because you get several top ultra guys where a bit of track background is becoming part of the equation, and I think it definitely plays to strengths. Where it's a tool, but when you're going such a long distance, I think sometimes you can also overuse, like you just run yourself into the ground because you think it's too easy of a pace, and then all of a sudden, before you know it, you're stopping and you went too fast.
For sure, yeah. I mean, I guess one of the ways that you've gained loads of fans, Jim, is not only that you've been winning races, but it's the way that you win, and you have this very kind of bold kind of, you know, I guess in some ways a high risk strategy of going out from the front and going after course records. It reminds me a little bit of the way that I guess someone like Prefontaine ran races, although I know you're doing different distances. Do you kind of look up to people, to someone like that, and do you think that actually you're interested in winning in a certain way?
I mean, I would say, yeah, there's a lot of runners I've looked up to growing up. I think most American kids at some point or another look up to Prefontaine. Kind of one of the first runners you find out about as a high school
kid. Yeah, right, yeah.
But as you kind of peel the layers back a bit, there are so many really great runners to look forward or like look up to and look at some of that. I would say it's an interesting strategy. I think it almost works best in what might be like a younger sport, like back in the 60s, 70s when. Yeah, I mean, today's track has gotten so much more tactical. Yeah, it's just crazy fast. So I don't really see it happening too much. The marathon's a little interesting because I think people start dictating the rhythm and the pace of the race at the front rather than tucking in behind as much, which I think is a lot more fun. It is pretty fun to run at the front, but then you also kind of got to be able to raise the red flag of when someone else goes and runs really quick off the start and you're just like,
yeah,
there's no way they're sticking that. Or, I mean, and it's what everybody, I guess, kind of has to sometimes do with my pace. They either got to go with it or call BS and let me go. And sometimes I would say I've gotten pretty good at kind of sticking the right pace, which has been pretty fun.
Do you find it invigorating though to sort of to go off at that kind of pace? I mean, obviously, yeah, you can sustain it, but do you get a kind of thrill of kind of the kind of front running?
Definitely. I think I feed off of front running a bit. There's a bit of confidence you gain from it. At the same time, whether I've been leading UTMB or even like the World 100K Championships back in 2015 that I ran and just popped really bad. Jonas Bude actually won that race. But I think Steve Way was a big favorite that year.
Yeah, right, yeah.
But that was an example of kind of just you're in the middle of the race and you give it a little bit of retrospect thought in the moment and you're just like, how am I in front of this race? And I think in that situation in the 100K, it's like, well, maybe that was a mistake. But then you start to get more experience and start to learn it a little better. And it started to pay off a bit more.
Yeah. I'm just thinking about anyone who's listening to this, who might be thinking about doing a 50 miler or a 100 miler. What would you say are some of the lessons that you've learned that people could kind of easily put into practice if they were thinking about stepping up to a distance like that?
Yeah, I would say don't be afraid to. I'd encourage people to step up in distance. I think it's a really fun, great challenge. I kind of got my foot in the door with looking at some really mountainous, like 5-6 hour winning times for 50K sort of races.
Yeah.
That's kind of what inspired me. And then as I got into the sport, you kind of realize like a lot of the biggest races are even longer than that. Specific things that help. I would say making a race plan, figuring out and trying to guess how long it's going to take you to either get from like your crew spot to crew spot or aid station to aid station. And a lot of times I always carry my own nutrition. I think that was kind of one of those lessons of you go to fill up whatever they have in their big jug and you hit one and it's like the perfect taste. You hit the next one, it's almost water, and then you hit the next one and it's just pure sugar and you're just, there's no consistency with it. So just that place to learning, like how your caloric intake and what you need to kind of sustain your pace and stuff. And then when you analyze what you think your pace is going to be, all of a sudden you can figure out how long it's going to take you to get from one aid station to the next. And then now let's say that's 3 hours and you're like, well, what do I need to carry on me for a 3 hour run? It's not carrying stuff for a 20 hour run anymore. It's carrying stuff for 3-5 hours as opposed to, so you make it more manageable and you kind of stay in the moment. I think also coming from a bit of that track background, I think something I've started to really gravitate towards and try to learn a lot more about is some of these stories where people don't have that natural running background and they come in and they're just tough as nails and they get it done and they grind really, really well. I think those style of ultra runners are kind of really inspiring to me because it's a lot of what I don't feel I always am, but what I need to get better at to grow as an ultra runner. So, I would say the last thing would be pick a race that you get pretty fired up to train for.
Yeah.
And making it a good goal. But I think that's going to take you a long way as far as in training and during the race to be very excited to do the race you're doing.
Yeah, I mean, talking about races to get excited about, I mean, I guess you've made your name very much at the Western States 100, which is a race that will be familiar to lots of listeners, but it's you know, it's one of the great 100-mile races, almost the kind of original 100-mile race. What was it about the race, first of all, that got you excited about it, and why do you think that it seemingly plays to your strengths as a runner?
Yeah, well, I think it first kind of drew my attention just because it was considered, at least coming from an American perspective, as the ultra runner, like the ultra run. So if you wanted to make it in the sport, you wanted to be there and you wanted to try to win that race. So I think that's what kind of got me first setting my sights on Western States was,
yeah,
that was just one of the first big ones I had ever heard about. I mean, yeah, I guess kind of funny of in that lapse between college and picking up some trail running stuff, I had actually been to France during like the UTMB week and picked up a
pamphlet
French, didn't know what it said, kind of chucked it away. And like, that was about that. I don't really care to do that, I guess. But yeah, and then as I've gotten into it, you start learning more about races across the country and then across the world, and even traveling globally is still difficult especially currently, but in general, like, it's expensive to travel and race globally, so you kind of got to pick and choose some of the races that either exciting places or have really big names for themselves, whether it's UTMB or like one I wanted to target this year was Comrades Marathon. So and then what was the other part of the question?
Well, I guess my question is, which I feel like the Western States 100 for you, it's a race that is made because it's a running race, I guess, more than a UTMB. There's lots of hiking, no matter how fit you are. I guess it feels like a race that kind of plays to your strengths, I would say.
Yeah. It's definitely a running race, which I think is really fun and makes it kind of exciting. It's a high pace race compared to UTMB. I think I do well with that. I think another part of it is the heat in the race. There is 2017, I guess, like the heat got me, but I would also say that's just that. And like, I would still say it's one of my best strengths, and kind of own the fact that I'm from Phoenix, Arizona, and it's like one of the hottest places in the US. Right. So I try to like kind of embrace that aspect of it. And then it's a lot of downhill running. I consider myself a pretty good downhill runner. It's been fun. I mean, another thing about it is just transitioning one state over is an easy transition compared to, especially a lot of international athletes that have to come in and try to compete. It's always harder to fly over an ocean and show up and be ready on game day sort of thing. So it just adds more complications for international athletes, I think.
You mentioned like the Comrades there and the UTMB. I wonder if there's any anything in you that'd be keen to come to the UK and try any. I mean, I guess Kilian Jornet came over and did the Bob Graham round. Are there any UK challenges that would appeal to you, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, the rounds seem like they have so much history to them. They're drawing. I guess it's one thing where, because it's also another fun, easier country to travel to, which makes it more enjoyable sometimes. Because I could come to the US or the UK and just be more comfortable that you guys kind of speak English. and I can at least communicate and figure out what's at the grocery store. That goes a long way. I guess there hasn't been a specific race or FKT route that has really stood out to me. I know in my Hoka Carbon X like time trial race, the one of the cool races that stood out in researching stuff about that was the London to Brighton race that Bruce had set the unofficial fastest 50 mile. And that race doesn't happen anymore. I heard there is actually a new a trail version of that.
There is a trail version, that's been sort of on and off for about 10 years, I think. Meant to be a really nice off-road route, but it'd be comparatively slow to what the route that Bruce went down. But it's very famous for a cycle ride, actually. That there's a kind of London to Brighton cycle ride that happens, but
that would come up on like my Google search.
Yeah. What about food, Jim? Are you I guess ultra running can feel like a place of kind of very adventurous diets or extreme kind of ideas about kind of low carb, high fat, and all that stuff. What's your philosophy when it comes to eating food?
I guess nowadays I would be considered a traditionalist. I'm very much a sugar oriented food planner for races.
Yeah, yeah.
I would also say like, most of my races are 16 hours and less, like 3 or 2 hours to 16 hours is going to be kind of the meat and potatoes of the races I've done. So sugar works really well for that. Mm. I think with my experience with some longer ultras that are going to be like 20, 24 hour range, I can see how other foods are definitely very attractive and they help kind of settle your stomach, and you got to deal with more hunger issues and stuff, and just kind of that satiating feeling you also have to address. But I would say my philosophy is based off of sugar.
Like gel sugar or real food sugar, or a bit of both?
Like gel sugar. So it would be in my bottles and carrying gels. I would say currently, like, I'm using Morton products.
Oh yeah. So, yeah. Yeah.
I used to use a hot, like a goo Roctane brew a lot. And that one was higher calories in my bottle. And I would take a lot less, like, I would still supplement that with the Morton gels, but now I'm transitioning more to using the Morton 160, which is a really light flavor in the bottle. And just taking 2 gels an hour. So you're flirting with 300 to 360 calories an hour, which is going to be a high amount of calories to do. I would say when I kind of train out in the mountains more nowadays, if I'm hitting at least 200, generally it's going to be a pretty sustainable day. I don't necessarily need to reach for that 300 plus consistent hour after hour calories as much when you're slowing down the pace a bit.
Yeah, that sounds like a much more sensible tactic than the 100 mile I had to go at. I thought I could power myself on dates, and it didn't end very well.
in theory, dates are like, they're exactly what you need.
I agree.
I find the flavors really strong and they get a little dry.
Yeah, and it caused some stomach issues actually for me, which I was surprised. And they also weigh a bit as well. So I think that's the advantage of a gel, isn't it? Is that it's sort of lightweight, and you're not kind of loaded down by what you're eating.
Yeah, I really like the Morton gels because they're a lighter consistency. It's not as syrupy and doesn't stick in your mouth as much.
You mentioned about runners who maybe don't have the great physical attributes, but they're really mentally tough. And it reminded me of, I think it was Scott Jarecki said that ultra running is 90% mental and the rest of it's just in your head. And I think he was partly being a bit sort of facetious with it. But do you think that the ratio is as high as that? Or do you think actually that essentially like the physically fittest athlete tends to triumph on the day when it comes to like 50 or 100 mile races?
So the course depends a lot. I would say the more it is just a road race or even road ultras, some of that's going to play into coming to play. But then once you start getting into like what Jonas Koris did in 24 hours and 48 hours in Spartathlon sort of thing, and you kind of watch some videos of him running and you're like, it's got to be pretty mental power with that. Because he just did extraordinary feats. And then I don't know, he's not the bounding Eliud Kipchoge sort of stride like that.
His training was mad, Jim, right? Like his training, he said he never ran more than like a half marathon in training, and he took a couple of months off every year, apparently.
I love the fact that he would do all of his training on a track too, essentially.
He'd
just do loops and loops and just like, And I think you get that a bit, and kind of going back to that 100K 50 mile run from the other year, looking into some of the Japanese runners. I think Mayo has the world record right now, and some of the guys that have ran really competitive 100Ks. And then you kind of look at the Japanese culture for marathon. I think they have a very disciplined, very monotonous, comparatively at least, way of training, and they just get out the door and they're just on it. Like 6 a.m. they knock out 10-mile run, and then noon they knock out a workout, and then 6 p.m. they go for another like walk, and it's just like they're just living, breathing, eating, like everything about it. And I do like that the Japanese, a lot of them are really high volume runners too. But I'm also mystified of like they're doing it at sea level in Japan. And I'm just like, I think, the advantage of training at altitude is really great in the marathon. I've gotten really interested in it. And I think the bigger the ultra, as far as time-wise, probably the more mental you need to be. And whether that's being a little more crazy or a little more tougher, you need a bit of both. And if you did like the 50-mile road race is a pretty pure runner aspect. But I would say there's definitely moments in there of like after 40 miles, I kind of picked it up to a pace where in retrospect, I think I made some mistakes because I picked it up in the middle a bit, and I think I paid it back a lot, especially with the increasing heat through the day. But there was a good hour and a half where you just kind of got to buckle up mentally and hang in there. And I mean, I was going from just floating like 5 30-minute miles to barely being able to hang on to a 6-minute mile at the end. It gets pretty grindy. So
yeah, I bet
when you're pushing the limits, I think the mental aspect's always going to come into play.
This is the Runner's World podcast.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
I'm just interested, we mentioned Yannis Kouros there, and I guess for a lot of people, you know, he was possibly the ultimate ultra runner, and what he did at Spartathlon particularly, it's almost sort of hard to believe it. Like he was, I think actually the year that he won the first time, he was so quick that people didn't actually believe he'd run it. Does that race hold an appeal for you? Because I know for a lot of people, they feel like it's kind of almost a sort of origin of distance running, Spartathlon.
Yeah. It hasn't quite struck a chord with me yet. Right now I feel like I have such a big, Western States for me was a lot of time and energy and several years for me to try to get to the point where I finally won the race. Nowadays, I guess the biggest two ultras I would really like to focus on are Comrades and UTMB, which is probably why I've brought them up multiple times. But it's kind of like you got to check off certain boxes and then you figure out what's next. I would say I'm not as intrigued in the road ultras as I am the trail ultras. I don't think trail ultras have as much of a rich history as road ultras, actually. So But they're like popular and I think they're more trendy right now. But at the same time, I would say like, it's a lot of fun to go do a race on a trail and yeah. go places, and whether it's point to point or loops, I think are just always really great course profiles.
Yeah.
I find it really stimulating to train for the trails and a lot more freeing mentally to kind of like you ask how to pace first, like through the mountains, and it's like, it's all got to be off of feel for the most part. Whereas on the road, and whether it's Spartathlon or 24 hours or 100 mile or 100K sort of thing on the road, it's like you kind of got to try to run it as scientifically as possible to an extent of you're trying to hold a pace and click splits. And it's just a little less appealing to me.
Yeah, fair enough. Just a couple more questions, Jim, if that's right, if you've got time.
Yeah.
Great. I thought it was great that you went down to the marathon distance and did a really good debut there. I guess what I'm also interested in that kind of the reverse of that, of like, I guess a lot of East African runners who often dominate the marathon distance, they're largely absent really from the ultra running scene. Would you like to see a couple of the kind of top guys from Kenya and Ethiopia, you know, have a go at, in your home turf, I guess, have a go at the Western States or something?
I guess I jokingly kind of say like, I would love to see him start ultra running in about 5 years of just like after round three.
Yeah,
I mean, I think you talk about the raw talent of the abilities that they're able to run, and so I would say the top guys are going to be busy with the track and the marathon, and that's going to be kind of, I think, the way it is because of the Olympics. Yeah. And with them being Olympic events, that's where the majority of the money is usually going to stay. Mm. But then you talk about the depth that East Africa has, and then you get into Uganda with, I mean, Joshua Chipper, but as one of the current top runners in the world. But you think about Uganda and what they train on over there that's different than Ethiopia and Kenya, is like they get so many more mountains and hills and more trailish stuff in Uganda, and it kind of seems like, and then they also dominate like the World Mountain Running Championships when they do show up. So it's really interesting. I think plenty of them would transition over and just reset a lot of things. It would be fascinating. I guess I kind of look at it as if in retrospect, 30 years fast forward, if my times kind of hold up like how, at least in the US, marathoning times from the 70s have kind of held up over time. I'd say that's kind of cool. But I would say it's also a financial thing of like, when you talk about the how much it costs to travel to Chamonix to get a Airbnb and to do the race, and then you walk away with empty pockets, or like, so I guess UTMB started offering what, like 2000 euros for the win, but then Western States, we'll go with that one because it offers zero. To be UTMB, so like they're walking away with nothing to support themselves back home, and it's just until that changes, you're not really gonna, I think, see a transition that way. I think it would be cool for, I mean, if a brand wanted to have a real impact, you just kind of open the floodgates, but just sponsor a few like quote unquote sub elite ultra or marathoners that are 207 guys. And it's like, you'd think that would like really give them a foot forward in ultra running. But then it also goes back to, I think, the motivation to do the race and to learn about ultra running and to be inspired to go run around a mountain and to go like be inspired to that this isn't just stupid, but to keep doing it and keep pushing. Yeah. I think that part's really motivating. So almost having the right catalyst that can help inspire those sort of talented athletes to want to do it, I think, is really important. At some point in an ultra, you're going to look at yourself in the mirror and just like, what am I doing here? And you don't want to just fold the cards and go home. You kind of go like, well, this is my shot at doing this race finally. Like, I got to keep pushing. And there's a little bit of learning. I think there needs to be a financial incentive with it, because that's a lot of reasons why those guys are in the sport to begin with. In addition to a lot of them just have pure natural ability to run really fast, really far. So, it's a matter of time before that does happen. And it's going to be extremely exciting to see how more talented runners than myself can help move the sport forward.
But let's talk about your running this year, Jim. So obviously, you know, lots and lots of massive races have been cancelled, and including the Western States. So what are your plans? Let's be optimistic, and let's say that next year lots of races are going to be on. What would be on your wish list if you're thinking that far ahead?
Yeah, so it kind of just pushes what I had planned for this year to next year.
Right.
And I would say I'm kind of giving comrades, like, at first I was going to say I would love to do it once and be lucky enough to win it. And you talk about traveling again. South Africa is like 2 European flights. Most of the routes that we take from the States. So it's a tough race to travel to. But I guess I'll be aiming towards Comrades in June and UTMB in the end of August, which is a really interesting and kind of awkward transition. I've transitioned from that marathon earlier in the year to trying to find my mountain legs again. And it's interesting. And the whole process of COVID-19 this year and races canceling, it's like, sometimes I'm not sure whether I'm overtraining or just unmotivated as much as like having that race that excites you on the calendar to get out the door and really push for. Those are my 2 big races that were supposed to happen this year. And I'll be looking to do those races next year. And I think if races get canceled similarly next year, more things will go to FKT options. So who knows if there's a round in there. I hear there's a lot of...
London to Brighton, Jim. You could come over and do London to Brighton.
Well, I've already done a 50 mile, though. Like, I don't know. And
I'll have a think.
Yeah, and even whether... I mean, I think it's Glencoe's up in Scotland, though, right?
Yeah.
Maybe you can link together a couple little things like that, but even the fell season over there is always interesting me. Fell racing seems crazy, and it's not trail running, it's obviously not road running, and I just hear that people in fell running can just run so fast downhill. And I'd be really interested to see like how fast, because that was one of my first experiences of being a trail runner and going to Europe, was just like all the Americans just say like, oh, the Europeans, they just run so fast downhill. It's insane. And stereotypically, yeah, the Europeans just, they win races and they run away from Americans on the downhills. So I remember like a couple of times I've just been like, oh man, they're going to come on the downhill, I better just push. And I've been surprised with like, oh, I'm a pretty good downhill runner. So I would be interested to see how fast fell runners run downhill, because I've heard it's just maniac how fast they go.
Yeah, I think that there's a sort of term of like brain off, brakes off is the sort of the fell running philosophy. But you'd be very welcome, Jim, I'm sure, in the fell running scene. I'm sure they'd love to have you, and you could test yourself against some of their... they're greats as well. Jim, thanks so much for making the time to speak with me for the Runners World podcast. It was absolutely great to talk a bit more about your running, and I hope both those big races for you next year happen, and that you can do really well in both of them.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. Always trying to keep something on the goal list, and you kind of got to stay dynamic these days, but it's always an exciting time. So thanks again for having me.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.